What is my perfect crime? I break into Tiffany's at midnight. Do I go for the vault? No, I go for the chandelier. It's priceless. As I'm taking it down, a woman catches me. She tells me to stop. It's her father's business. She's Tiffany. I say no. We make love all night. In the morning, the cops come and I escape in one of their uniforms. I tell her to meet me in Mexico, but I go to Canada. I don't trust her. Besides, I like the cold. 30 years later, I get a postcard. I have a son, and he's the chief of police. This is where the story gets interesting. I tell Tiffany to meet me in Paris by the Trocadero. She's been waiting for me all these years. She's never taken another lover. I don't care. I don't show up. I go to Berlin. That's where I stash the chandelier.
Houston police are investigating the death of a woman whose nude body was found on the side of the road.
Police are now working to figure out what happened to Alexis Sharkey. The social media influencer was found dead along the side of a West Houston road.
And new information this noon hour, a woman's body found this weekend identified as Alexis Robinault. She called herself a mentor on social media and had a popular Instagram account.
New tonight, the mother of a popular social media influencer is telling us she wants answers about what happened to her daughter.
The medical examiner is working to determine how Alexis Sharkey died. The social media influencer's body was found Saturday along a West Houston road.
We've talked about high-risk people on our show before. Runaways, drug addicts, prostitutes, like that. Today we're talking about Alexis Sharkey, and when you look at Alexis, you don't really think high-risk person. Alexis was beautiful. She was glamorous. She was an Instagram influencer. But as we scratch just below the surface, we actually find that she was pretty high risk. Alexis was found dead and naked alongside a frontage road in Houston, Texas. Now, according to her sister, she hated the word influencer. She preferred business person. But because she had a pretty big following on Instagram and on TikTok, and because she was so beautiful, her death got a lot of attention. I think what I want to do here first is get to know Alexis, try to find out what were some of the things that she was doing, who was she doing them with, and then we'll get into the details of what we know about her death. Along the way, we'll check in with Rick to get his take on it. Now, Alexis died only about 2 months ago, so new details continue to emerge. My name is Gavin Fish, and this is Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin. Alexis Sharkey was born Alexis Lee Robinall in Warren, Pennsylvania. That's about an hour and 15 minutes away from where I live here in Western PA. She graduated from Youngsville High School in 2012. Now, Youngsville is just a small town about 15 minutes outside of Warren. To give you an idea of how small of a place it is, her graduating class had about 80 people in it. The closest city, if you can call it that, is probably Jamestown, New York. Which is pretty close to Warren and Youngsville. It has about 30,000 people in it. So after graduating high school, Alexis went to Pitt. That's the University of Pittsburgh. Pitt has several satellite campuses, and she posted to Instagram from a few of them. She graduated summa cum laude with a degree in biology in 2016. She also graduated with minors in psychology and exercise.
She was very smart and very driven. She graduated summa cum laude with a biology degree, and she was a smart cookie.
Now, I'm only judging from her Instagram posts here, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. But it appears to me that Alexis went through a bit of a transformation in college. In high school, she was a cute little cheerleader in a small town at a small school. She was likely popular. She was definitely pretty. But in college, it looks like she decided to, you know, cut loose a little bit and have some fun. Totally understandable. College is different than high school, especially when you come from such a small town. It looks like she had a lot of friends and that she was having a very good time in school. But, you know, she studied hard too. She said on one Instagram post that her grades were in the top 2% of her class, and she did graduate summa cum laude. So she cut loose and she knuckled down. Her mom has said that she was going to go to medical school after graduation, but that she wanted to take a year off. And during that year, her life took a pretty different path. In 2016, Alexa moved to Odessa, Texas. And it's unclear why she did this. There's conjecture on the internet that says that she went down there with a then fiancé. But the fact remains that she went to Odessa and she started working at a bar and restaurant called Twin Peaks, which is where she met her future husband, Tom Sharkey, who is 23 years her senior. From what I can gather, he was working in the energy industry down there. And the two of them hit it off and were engaged on June 13th, 2019. They were married in either late 2019 or early 2020. There are different reports out there, and the county that they got married in doesn't have a searchable database online.
I mean, you know, from all, ironically enough, appearances, it looks like this is a relationship that started out with and continued on very superficial things, you know, looks. I mean, you know, she was beautiful, and, you know, I have no idea whether or not she had any work done or anything like that, but it was clear that she was very, very into her looks. And obviously he spent quite a bit of time at the gym, and who knows what substances he was involved with. You know, I mean, when
to
you get that
big, yeah.
Yeah. It's not really a natural thing, especially at his age. So yeah. He probably had some help there. I mean, I don't know. Right. I'm just speculating, but it was clear that that's where they were. I think that based on what I know and what we know, it looks like they were eyeing income from an Instagram channel, and one beautiful person makes pretty good money. So two, I think they were kind of looking to capitalize on that.
Yeah, she probably brought that up to him. It's like, look at what I do, you know. And he was I'm thinking at age 43, you know, a 24-year-old woman is interested in you. You'd start to feel a little bit younger, right? You're like, I want to be part of that.
There's kind of cliche reasons why they were both at a place like Twin Peaks too, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, he was clearly, you know, there for the Twin Peaks, mm-hmm. so to speak. And there's no doubt that beautiful women at those kind of restaurants, make good tips, and the better the flirting, the better the tips. I mean, it's pretty common sense. So that was probably a mixture, you know, just waiting to explode. Right.
Right. And I like to give people the benefit of the doubt at the time. Like if she's 22, 23, 24 years old, by the way, so she's officially half his age. He was 23 years older than her.
Right.
But they're each of them.
And you said he may have kids her that are.
It's been said online that he had been married at least once before and that he had children who were grown up and out of the house. So,
right.
Yeah, he could have children her age. But, you know, maybe she wanted a little stability and he wanted a little fun, and they got together and they got married and they decided to make it happen.
And it was pretty quick, right?
It was pretty quick.
Yeah. And that's, again, you know, it's a lot of this stuff on the surface anyway, is very cliche. I mean, you know, guy's been married before and, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't know if he's been a gym rat his whole life, but he certainly was, going to the gym a lot and wanting to look good. And he was hanging out in places where there were some beautiful women. So it was clear that, you know, he was looking for something. And like you said, you know, she's in her early 20s. None of us know what the heck we're doing at 23, you know? So, you know, he might've been a charming guy and, you know, promised her some things as far as lifestyle that she was looking for.
By the time she married Tom, Alexis was already working as an independent mentor for a company called Monate. And by all accounts, she really enjoyed it. She used her good looks, and she was obviously comfortable in front of the camera to gain followers on Instagram. Those followers were then pitched Monate products. And I'm not saying that's the only way that she got sales and underlings. Monate is a multi-level marketing company, but it was definitely a major tool that she used to do it. And I don't want to get too sidetracked here, but there's something that I've noticed. or at least it's something that I'm suspicious of. I think that Alexis had plastic surgery prior to joining Monate. And I only bring it up as an illustration to show that Alexis was a driven person. That's all. She had a plan to use her good looks to drive business, and I think she did a little bit of tweaking to get the best result. So when I compare photos, one from high school and one from about 2019, I'm pretty sure she had a rhinoplasty and a lip augmentation. Again, I'm only mentioning it to shine a light on my belief that she had a very specific plan and she was implementing it as best she could. Okay, let's get back to where I was. Everything seemed to be going okay for Alexis and Tom. And that's what social media does, right? It shows the world what you want them to see. Things were looking good, but I think there were some issues creeping into the young Sharky marriage. For a few months during 2019, Tom and Alexis moved to Colorado. Then they went back to West Texas. And I don't have any more details about that. But then in early 2020, they moved to Houston. Shortly thereafter, Alexis began looking for some friends using an app called Bumble BFF. She found several girlfriends that way, and I think the first one was a woman named Tanya Ricardo. Anyway, a group of girlfriends formed. They would go out together, dinners, movies, clubs, that kind of thing. And I'm going to stop here because I think there's a bit of a red flag that I'm seeing. I talked to my wife about it, and she's not exactly on the same page as me, but hear me out. And there are exceptions to this for sure. But in general, couples tend to find other couples to hang out with. If a married person is looking for single friends, I think it's an indication that something is probably wrong at home. Of course, I'm probably benefiting from 2020 hindsight because we know that things weren't going super well at home. Rick, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, I think knowing that he was married once before, you know, I don't know. I'm just going to make an assumption that he wasn't married to someone this young and beautiful and also popular on Instagram, that kind of a thing. You know, we also don't know really why they moved around a lot. It could have been because he had a jealous thing. I mean, guys that age have a lot more experience, you know, when you're in your 40s, you know, versus in your 20s. And even if he wasn't a jealous person naturally, it wouldn't take much, right? Because she's going to draw a lot of attention even when they go to buy a burger, right?
Yeah, she was always, anyway, it seems this way. I should always preface it that way, right? But it does seem that when she went out, she was made up. And she was dressed well. That's the way it seems.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, it makes sense. If she's got an Instagram channel, she's probably always ready to take pictures for her channel.
Yeah. I mean, that could
be. That's got to be part of it.
That could be for sure. I only have a little bit of experience on this. I've been married for 22 years. Yeah. And my wife has only ever really gone out with the girls. Like they were going to go out to a club and dance. And she was kind of uncomfortable with it, but thought, you know, I haven't really ever done this. So I'm going to go out with the girls.
It wasn't a lifestyle.
Right. Right. So I just feel like if somebody is looking, like proactively looking for friends outside of the home and not looking for friends for both of them, she was looking for friends for herself.
Right.
That kind of is a red flag.
Well, and you know, when we discussed this, this case before, the things that came up for me is that if he is still, while they're married, a gym rat and he works in the oil industry, you know, I'm assuming that he worked in the fields because of, you know, if you're an executive in the oil industry, you wouldn't have time to spend in the gym that guy clearly spends in
probably
the gym.
Probably not, yeah.
So that's my guess. But if he works in the fields, he's not working 8 to 5. Right. So he's working long hours. And if he's still spending time in the gym, it could be that she just didn't want to be sitting at home. You know, she's young.
That's true.
You know, she's young. So, I think as we all know, you know, nobody knows what goes on behind closed doors.
Sure.
You know, at least she wasn't on a dating app. Right. But she's young. And I'm sure if she was connecting with young women her age, the places they go aren't you know, there are going to be other guys there. And she is attractive, so, you know. So well, that,
not only was she attractive, but the women that she hung out with, this group of friends, they right. were attractive.
Right.
So, I mean, that's like a magnet for for just men, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we're talking why this specific thing, you know, why it was like that and if it was right or wrong, or if we're just in general talking about whether or not it's okay for people to have friends outside the marriage. I mean, I think what we just talked about, if it's a lifestyle thing, I mean, having girlfriends and going out, you know, with the girls, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But if it's an every night thing, she's probably
escaping something.
She's exactly. Yeah. She's probably escaping something. She's not happy being at home. They're not connecting, or they're not spending time together like she wanted, you know. And how many years had they been married at that point?
I think it was their first year.
So they moved two times in a year?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I think anyway, based on what I've read. There just aren't really a lot of specifics online. There's just a lot of generalities. But
obviously, the focus of this channel and the things we're trying to get at, and we're being careful because this is a guy who has not been charged, correct?
Yeah. In fact, what we're waiting on is the autopsy results. And so one of the things that I want to be really careful about is that we don't know if Tom had anything to do with it. And based on what I have read, I'm kind of leaning toward he didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, and that's the thing we have to be careful about as you know, and the difference between this case and some of the other cases we've done is when it's a 50-year-old case, you can kind of speculate. And it's way different than speculating with someone who is, you know, could be watching this right now.
Right.
But we also have to do our due diligence, so to speak, and kind of look at some of the paths. I mean, to be honest with you, at first glance, it could very well be, you know, he got jealous and he's a big, strong guy and maybe he's on steroids. I mean, I'm just throwing stuff out. I'm not saying that's a fact. Or the fact that she was going out, she could have picked up a stalker. Right.
Yeah. And probably anywhere in between those two.
That's right.
Those two things. So,
yeah.
During an all-girls trip to Marfa, Texas in early 2020, Alexis's friend Laura said, "We were sitting down at dinner and she lost it. We walked back to our hotel room and she confided in me that night in things. I looked at her and thought, she's petrified. This girl is scared for her life." Another friend said of the same trip, "Her and her husband were going through a divorce. She went on to say that Alexis had told her on that trip that Tom had been putting hands on her." Another unnamed friend is quoted to have said, again at the same trip, "Throughout the trip, he was sending really awful, nasty messages to her. But one night when she and I were talking alone, she said, 'He strangles me and chokes me out, and I black out and wake up on the bathroom floor every single time.'"
Essentially, if we, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, having daughters and the whole, you know, the being careful about what we assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not discounting, you know, any victims, either their words or their, you know, their take on things. And it appears from everything that we've seen that, you know, with her girlfriends that, that she was, according to her, Tom was laying hands on her.
Right.
And I guess at one point she confided in them that he was choking her to unconsciousness.
Right.
You know, which is
choking her out.
Right.
According to her. Yes.
Right. And so, you know, again, not knowing what happens behind closed doors. I mean, was it an isolated case? Was it, you know, it happened in the heat of the moment and then she went on the trip and complained about it? I mean, we don't know those things. Not that it's ever right anyway. What I'm trying to get at is I'm looking at the physical evidence that we have too. And even though we don't have the full results from the autopsy report, we do know that there weren't marks on her that would indicate her being physically abused or at least not in, you know, the previous days.
Rick, online there are there are pictures of a deposition, like screenshots of a deposition that was given during a divorce proceeding when Tom was divorcing or was being divorced from his previous wife.
Okay.
They go to great lengths to try to make it seem, or they're painting him as an abuser, as somebody who lays hands on his wife or children or whatever.
It seems to be showing a pattern.
It does. But also, I kind of want to give him the benefit of the doubt here, because in those types of legal arguments, I mean, the strategy is always to kind of paint your opponent as not the holy opponent, and paint yourself as holier than that, right? So,
right.
I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, you know, it's obvious. I mean, most divorces, when it gets, you know, when it actually goes to court, they're contentious by nature, right? Emotions are high, you know, life plans are being ruined, and there's all kinds of question marks on how people are going to go forward. And there's, you know, usually, you know, people start to put a wall around them, and they're no longer sharing information. So then there's speculations, and, you know, it can get very emotional. So if it gets to the point where there's depositions, emotions are high. And when you start slinging around accusations of physical abuse, it's my, you know, I mean, I don't think you need to have gone through it to see that it's gotten to a very serious point. You know, that's not a thing that you just sling around, you know, in court. That's a pretty serious accusation. So, so if that is there, I mean, you know, I mean, it's fair to try and put together a pattern, so that we're not missing anything. You know what I mean? I mean, if it turns out that it wasn't him, but there are, some signs there that he, you know, has a history of physical abuse. And like we've been discussing here in this video, you know, a guy who, if he's got testosterone, you know, more than you normally do, and, you know, you're a lot older, and you've been through something like what you just described, you know, he's been through a contentious divorce before, and I guarantee he doesn't want to do that again. And they got married so quickly that you don't have a chance to kind of get to know the other person and what their lifestyle is and what lifestyle they want. I mean, come on, 23-year-old has a whole different point of view on what a lifestyle is compared to a 46-year-old, right? Yeah. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So a 46-year-old, I mean, you know, you'll want to go out every once in a while, but when your girl's getting hit on every single time you go to the bathroom, you know, I can see how that might get a little tiring. And she's 23. She wants to get out and have fun with her girlfriends. So I can see where that would cause contention, and I could see where he would start throwing around the whole divorce thing. You know, so I don't know. It does show a pattern. It doesn't. It's certainly not a guarantee that he is an abusive guy, but it does show a bit of a pattern over many years.
So yeah, things aren't going well in the Sharkey home, which is why I wasn't terribly surprised when I learned that friends had claimed that Alexis was having an affair with this man, Sebastian Seb Marmolejo. Seb is a DJ in Houston, and in his scene, he looks to be kind of a big deal. Considering her age and lifestyle, I think he's probably a better match for Alexis. Okay, so the day is Thanksgiving 2020, and according to Tom Sharkey, he and Alexis have breakfast together. Then she leaves and shares a Thanksgiving meal with her friend Tanya and her family. Fortunately, we have some detail about Thanksgiving and the day after thanks to an image that Tanya Ricardo shared online. Let's walk through it. Thursday morning at 9:35 a.m., Alexis sent a group text that said, "Happy Thanksgiving." At 9:49, Tanya replies to the group, "If anyone needs a place to go tonight, my house is always open." At 10:50 a.m., Alexis sends a text directly to Tanya and says, "Does your fam do a big thing all day?" Tanya responds, "Yeah, kind of. We just drink and something. I can't read that word. Dez will be over at 5 p.m. A minute later, Alexis texts back to Tanya, "Yeah, if it's not, I would love to get out of the house, LOL." And Tanya responds, "You are always welcome here. Love you like a sis." That evening at 5:07 p.m., Alexis arrives at Tanya's house in a Jeep. And then early Friday morning, 12:30 a.m., Alexis leaves Tanya's with Seb in his vehicle to go to a bar. At 2:54 a.m., Alexis texts Tanya, "You up?" And it's not until 7:26 a.m. that Tanya replies, saying, "I am now. Are you okay?" Alexis at 9:02 responds, I was fine. I was going to grab my stuff, but I didn't realize what time it was. I drove home. Tanya responds, I can bring it to you. Thanks again. I love that you came. Alexis, an hour later, says, I have so much shit there. I'll come back, but thanks for having me. And Tanya responds, might as well move in, LOL. And that's when Alexis says, living on the couch here, so wouldn't be much different, ha ha. Tanya asks, he gave you the couch? And Alexis responds, no, I took it. I sleep better on it than he does. I've actually been sleeping on it for months. That evening, Alexis texts over to Tanya, are y'all doing anything exciting tonight or just staying in? And Tanya responds, I'm staying in tonight. My mom leaves tomorrow. Let's go out tomorrow night. What are your plans? Alexis responds, I don't have any, but I just realized it's Friday, LOL. And Tanya says, I know. I'm not sure how it's already Friday. And then Tanya notes in her image the order in which the group of friends last spoke to Alexis. 5:19 p.m. was LB, 6:01 CT, 6:05 TR, that's Tanya, 6:26 SM. So I think that those initials stand for Lauren Bro, Tanya Ricardo, and Seb Marmolejo. I'm not sure who CT is. The last bit of information we have as far as Alexis speaking to anybody else on Friday the 27th comes from an interview from Houston's Channel 13 and a reporter named Steve Champion. He spoke with Tom Sharkey on the phone on December 1st. And in that conversation, Tom said about their last conversation, and this is a quote, she understood me, I understood her. We didn't fight when she left. I just told her she couldn't drive under the influence. She left anyhow. This is where we're at. Okay, so a lot of people that are commenting about the last time Alexis and Tom spoke describe it as a fight. Tom didn't describe it that way. Whether or not it was, I think we can all safely assume that it didn't get physical based on the description of Alexis's body by the person who found her. And we'll get to that shortly. But first, I want to address what Tom said about under the influence. I mean, he could have meant that she had been drinking alcohol, she was drunk, or he could have meant that she was under the influence of drugs. And the only thing that I can find about Alexis's use of drugs comes from a Facebook post, again, from her friend Tanya Ricardo. In it, Tanya said, Alexis hated prescription drugs. She was totally against people taking antidepressant meds and anti-anxiety meds. She always tried to educate people on natural remedies. If her body OD, someone did it to her. And I think what she's talking about there are theories that Alexis overdosed on drugs, which may have killed her. Going back to Tanya's quote, again, shrooms were used to microdose. You don't even necessarily feel euphoria. And Tanya goes on to talk about Alexis's use of psychedelic mushrooms. But basically, what I'm getting at here is that Alexis took mushrooms. I started wondering about Seb, though. I mean, was he a drug user? The only thing that I could find was this photo of him with a bunch of weed. So I have no idea if he used harder drugs.
Well, you know, if he was, you know, a celebrity DJ, and that's a thing in case people don't know. So, you know, it's like being in a band. You know, people are offering you drugs constantly. You know, I mean, I can probably say with confidence that if you're posting stuff on social media with you holding bags of weed, you probably smoke pot.
Well, yeah, there's that. You know,
I don't think that's a stretch.
But pot isn't something that's going to make him do something violent or no. She's not going to overdose on pot, right?
No, no.
So,
and we don't have the toxicology report back.
Not yet. All we know is that she was found discarded, which we know from Dr. Olmsted that drug overdoses are, people who die of drug overdoses are discarded like that frequently.
Right.
And that there were no marks on her body.
And that's pretty much a fact, right? That she was discarded. She didn't walk out there. There was nothing on the bottom.
She didn't walk out there naked and she was clean.
And so it's not a suicide. It's not an accidental overdose on the side of the road. Someone else was involved.
No strangulation. you know, that we know about so far, because she was described as looking like she had just gotten out of the bath. No marks on her. So to me, if it is an overdose, it's harder drugs. It's opioids or something like that.
Or, I mean, you know, the other thing is that if, I mean, yeah, let's, that is one possibility, right? That it was an overdose and someone freaked out and dumped her body. She had spent a few days with Seb at that point, right?
So she had spent like a day and a half with Seb.
Okay. And you can only imagine how upsetting that would be for Tom, who is still legally her husband, right? You know, it would certainly explain a lot. So if he went out looking for her, found her, maybe found her, like you said, like she just got out of the shower. Maybe he found her. I mean, who knows? I mean, that, I mean, again, you know, emotions get high when you start talking about cheating. That's a, you know, depending on the person, that can be a very volatile situation for anyone.
I think though, I mean, I'm not defender of Tom, and it's right to have the two different extremes. And, you know, the truth is probably somewhere in between. Like on the one side, she was murdered by a jealous and enraged husband. And on the other side, she accidentally overdosed and somebody just laid her down in a field and hoped that she wouldn't be found for a while.
Right.
What happened probably.
Was she that far off the road?
She was just kind of, she wasn't very far off the road. She was described as being in bushes or in the brush alongside a frontage road. And that frontage road is alongside like a highway that runs like from where she is to their apartment is a straight shot down that highway 3 miles. So she wasn't even very far from
her apartment with Tom.
Yes.
Okay. And do we have a timeline as far as when the last time somebody saw her alive, like how long she might have been out there?
So the last time that somebody spoke to her was around 6 p.m. the day before.
The day before.
Yeah. So we don't know from police yet how long she was there. Yeah, we don't know any of that stuff. But
Yeah.
So, but my point that it was going to be is that if it was the violent husband, then there would be marks on her. Like if he violently beat her, there would be marks on her, right? So I'm inclined to believe that that isn't the case.
So my dark mind went in a different direction. And I'm not sure if I'm proud that this is how my mind works, but I was trying to draw some, I was trying to extrapolate out. I mentioned before there might've been steroid use. He could have been laying in wait with a needle.
With steroids. Did you overdose on
well, with something that I don't think it's not like a knockout drug. So, but if he had something like that, I mean, if he was buying something from people that, you know, they probably would know where to get it.
I see what you're making that connection. So if he's buying,
she gets out of the shower, he's lying in wait, boom, he takes care of her and then dumps her. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. We are conjecturing and we're looking at all the possibilities. So I'm not saying that happened, right? But that's certainly a possibility. A needle mark would not be detected on the side of the road. That would be detected later.
That's true. Alexis Sharkey's lifeless body was found alongside a frontage road about 3 miles away from the apartment that she shared with her husband, Tom Sharkey. She was completely naked. The first person to see her was a city worker named John Richardson. He had been alerted to a possible body by a worker he supervised. The worker thought it might be a mannequin, but called it into a supervisor to check it out and then went about his job.
It plays back. It plays back in my head every day. You know, I constantly be seeing, you know, just see her, you know what I'm saying, laying there. And he say, hey, man, I think I see a body, but I'm not for sure, or a mannequin. So we looking and we see feet, you know what I mean? Like half the feet was in the road. Man, I'm just devastated because I'm like, you know, I'm looking at a human being actually, you know, laying there dead, you know, and it kind of, you know, shook me up a little bit because, you know, I'm actually looking at somebody that's deceased. We just stunned and we looking, I'm looking, but there wasn't no visible wounds. It was like she just got out the tub, her body was clean. It wasn't, you know, nothing on her body, body was clean.
Shortly after Richardson found Alexis's body, he called the police, they arrived and began their investigation. And I think this is probably a good time to check in with Rick to kind of get his take on things. Rick?
So, you know, throughout this video, naturally, we're, you know, our channel is focused on getting to the bottom of things and finding out who did stuff. You know, we're trying to close cases. So, you know, solve crimes. So we've been making all these accusations or potential accusations about Tom, and we've been putting, you know, pieces together of a puzzle that
more like scenarios instead of accusations, right? But
possibilities, right? So, so naturally, you know, there are things out there like that affidavit about previous abuse and the fact that he's a big guy and you know, he could have been enraged and all those things. But I'm curious, what is Tom's take on this? I mean, I don't want to speak just for him. I mean, has he made statements about where what he believes happened?
So Tom has done things differently than, say, like Scott Peterson or Chris Watts, right, who just acted weirdly. Tom, for the first few days, was speaking to the press. He made a couple of statements to some local TV stations, and those were reported on. And they also reported that when they talked with the Houston PD, Tom had been cooperating with their investigation. But there was a point at which the autopsy was done. The report wasn't out, but the medical examiner's office was done with Alexis's body, and it was time to deliver her to next of kin for burial, right? And Alexis's mom described kind of having a fight with Tom. They wanted to take Alexis back to Pennsylvania to inter her there, and she kind of described it as she had to fight for it. But what I've kind of read is that he just stopped talking altogether. And when it had been 2 weeks of him not returning the phone calls of the medical examiner, that the medical examiner followed protocol to change next of kin from her husband to the person who was talking to them, which was Alexis's mother.
That strikes me as very odd.
It is odd, but it's also explicable. Like, I don't know. If you, for example, if I just went into a depression, it was like, you know, my wife was killed and I was threatening to divorce her, and why did I treat her that way? And
I mean, are people in contact with his friends and family? I mean, they would know.
So there are some friends that are speaking on Facebook, and I've seen, you know, screen grabs of their posts and stuff like that. But I haven't read anything about, is he depressed or anything like that? I'm just trying to say that it's possible. It is weird. It is weird, but it's also possible that he's just thrown his hands up and is given up. Right.
Right.
So, but that's where he is right now.
So he hasn't really directly put anything out there to the public, you know, like his theory of what happened to her.
No.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, everybody processes death like this in different ways, but at the same time, I think we've all been around long enough, you know, with TV shows and stuff, that you really do need to kind of, you know, say things to, I don't know. I just, you know, I guess you're right that someone could, you know, tailspin with something like this. But not saying anything is a little
suspicious. More suspicious of the guys that call the news media and are doing press conferences every day and are acting just like completely strange, like Chris Watts or Scott Peterson.
He also ignoring police?
Well, it wasn't that Tom was ignoring police. He was ignoring the medical examiner.
Yeah.
Right. From all that we can tell, he is cooperating with police.
Okay.
So I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because my mind goes towards if he's not holed up in his apartment and he is, you know, moving about in whatever way, if he's still going to work or, you know, cooperating with police, it just makes me feel that he doesn't want to deal with her body because he was upset and had, you know, put it in his mind. You know, maybe he didn't want to see what he had done. I don't know.
That's possible.
Speculation.
That's possible. So there's the story of the short life of Alexis Sharkey. It's a story that's still ongoing, so we may do an update in the future, possibly after the autopsy report comes out. In the meantime, we'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. If you're watching on YouTube, please drop a comment below. And if you're a podcast listener, please head over to our website, solvecrimeswithrickandgavin.com, and drop us a line there. Speaking of websites, we have posted links to all the stories we've used in this episode on Alexis's case page on the site. Again, just go to solvecrimeswithrickandgavin.com. We've also posted photos of Alexis, Tom, and everybody else that's involved with the story. So thank you for stopping by and sticking it out to the end. My name is Gavin Fish. This is Solve Crimes with Rick and Gavin.